For anyone visiting and living in central Tokyo, come visit the Nakameguro Tap Room from Baird Brewery. Opened in 2008, Nakameguro Tap Room is the first Tokyo area tap room from Baird Brewery. Their kitchen specializes in New Haven style appeats, which I have told you is the best style of Neapolitan pizza. New Haven style places a high emphasis on high temperature baking, fresh seasonal toppings, and a crispy light crust. Combined with all the classic Japan-based Baird beers on tap, enjoy all vintage beer hall feels at Nakameguro Tap Room. There's even a sofa area and a large TV screen great for sporting events. Only a 2-minute walk from Nakameguro Station, the tap room is open daily until 10 p.m. For more information, visit bairdbeer.com.
I love Freeman Chocodo as it is. I love that it's totally, it's definitely a reflection of my wife and I. I think there's some people that come here for a barbecue that are totally put off by a lot of it. They're like, why is there reggae music playing? Why isn't there mac and cheese? Why is there falafel on the menu? Like, I'm not from the South.
Yeah.
And that's totally not who I am. Like, I didn't study in Alabama doing barbecue. I'm from New York. That's specifically, like, my food flavors, my sense of vibe comes from that experience. And given all that, and how, like, not cost-effective what we do is compared to the amount of seats and stuff like that, this place will never make real money. Like, I'm totally happy with it, and it's I've never made this much money in my life before, but then again, I've always involved myself in selling old reggae records, like, not things that you make a fortune at.
Sure.
And so I always want this place to be what it is, and it will always feel like home to me, and it will always be perfect.
Hello there. Welcome to Made in Japan, Conversations with Meljo Catalan. This is my podcast about Japan, but it's not just your run-of-the-mill Cool Japan podcast. I want to explore a side of Japan besides the sushi and the sumo, anime, and video games. I'm here to extrapolate and meditate with the local people that your travel guide probably doesn't touch on. People that are hungry for making it, and people that have made it. This podcast is my talks with them.
Heyo! What is happening, everyone? Welcome to the Made in Japan podcast. And this is a new season of this pod of mine. Wow, season 6, I believe. And I hope everyone is good. And if you're new to this channel, welcome. Welcome to the craziness of it. And I'm glad I'm back. I'm fired up, ready to go for this new year, new round of guests I have planned. But first off, I want to tell you guys that Made in Japan podcast is mostly a donation-based podcast to provide drinks and the production cost of my podcast. Please feel free to donate on my Ko-fi page. That's ko-fi.com/Made in Japan podcast. With that, I'd like to continue as I did finish off last year with my new little mini series called Made and Served in Japan, which I will focus on people in the hospitality industry. I want to share these stories of specific establishments that highlight and feel the challenges and the excitement of opening a place in Japan and serving to the public. And so with that in mind, my next guest and the first one of this season is A1, Jeremy Freeman, co-owner and pitmaster of a really up-and-coming barbecue joint called Freeman Shokudo. It is nestled in a very quaint, very local community in the Shibuya-ku area called Nishihara Shotengai. And yeah, Jeremy was born and raised in New York, grew up there, and he loved the vibes of Nishihara Shotengai and opened up his barbecue joint here in Tokyo. We get to talk about a lot of things, the background, how the community is so important, and also, of course, music. I mean, one music lover to another, it's like, oh, I can talk to Jeremy all day about music, really. But for now, I was just so excited that I had the chance to come visit his restaurant. And on his day off, he just took the time and shared his story. And I was just listening to such an insightful man. And I really am amazed about the story of Jeremy and his wife, Maiko, pulling it together and transitioning from New York back to Tokyo and you know, giving it their all. And I think Freeman Shokudo is going to be a one booming spot for barbecue in Japan. And also, Maiko, his wife, was not attending the interview, but I really want to give her a shout out that she impressed me of her story as well. And those two putting this business together, I just think this is a perfect recipe of a great restaurant in a local community, and I think it's just going to boom, like literally it's going to blow up. I mean, it already is blowing up for people who don't know, but yeah, let's get it. And without further ado, this is Jeremy Freeman, co-owner and pitmaster of Freeman Shokudo. And here we go.
I normally am not the biggest breakfast person, but yeah. This morning, last night, I just wasn't hungry after a shift, and then I went and drank with my friend, and when I woke up this morning, I was like, all I had was beer, and I felt pretty hungry.
Yeah. Well, scrambled eggs, do you do it with like loads of butter?
Or? No, okay. not the eggs in Japan are such good quality that I don't think if anything, I use normal amount of butter, and if I'm feeling spicy, I add some sour cream. To finish it.
Yeah, so. I think that's the right way to make scrambled eggs.
That's as far as I go. But tons of butter just then becomes like butter.
Okay,
and it doesn't taste like eggs anymore.
Nice.
I think the best thing with scrambled eggs is like the way black pepper tastes with scrambled eggs.
Right.
Is like the perfect.
Oh, okay. Like, I've always liked it with mushrooms.
Ooh, mushrooms is good.
White button mushrooms.
Yeah.
You know?
White mushrooms are good, like really caramelized.
Yeah, if you do it right.
Super, super good. Caramelized onions, too, with scrambled eggs.
I'm getting hungry again.
Yeah. I mean, the best scrambled egg breakfast that I would always go back to is there's a place in New York called Barney Greengrass.
Okay.
Kind of one of the old Upper West Side like appetizing stores, and they have smoked sturgeon and eggs with caramelized onions. It costs like, I don't know, $50 at this point. When I was young growing up, it was like a cheap place, and now it's like incredibly expensive.
No, man, that's crazy. Well, Jeremy, first of all, thank you for having me over.
My pleasure.
I want to talk about when I first came here, because one of my buddies, he's one of my drinking buddies, he said, hey, there is this pastrami sandwich place. I went with my family. You got to check it out. Because he knows I'm from the East Coast. I'm
right.
from Connecticut.
Okay.
And I was like, all right, cool. And I come here. It was like last autumn.
Okay.
It was in the autumn. I didn't see you. I think I saw your wife and some other staff. But I was like, yeah, I'll just try this pastrami sandwich. And I, when it was served to me, I was just like teleported to New York. And I was just like, this reminds me of, you know, taking the Metro North from New Haven to visit my cousins in the Bronx. And my cousin would drive me to like his favorite like dining spot. And I don't know. It was like somewhere in Queens, maybe.
Oh, somewhere in Queens? Okay, because there's also like great Jewish deli in the Bronx.
Yeah.
Man, I'm forgetting. I'll remember it. It'll come to me in a weird time.
And when I took a bite of your pastrami sandwich, I literally teleported being with my cousin.
Oh, that's nice.
And it was like, yes, I'm back in the East Coast.
Oh, that's so good.
And so that's my first question for you. What food, it could be any food that you like, that you had, that literally teleported you to a special memory?
Well, it's funny because I'm not a trained chef in any way, shape, or form. But the one thing that I have skill-wise is I have incredibly good sensory memory. So there's dishes that I can remember from a long time ago, and I can recreate them. Mm-hmm. And when I get it perfect, I'm absolutely transported to exactly that place. And Galitz experience, it was like Galitz was thicker cut, mm-hmm. and it had more variety in its texture, I suppose, and it just tasted, I don't know, more soulful than like Katz's or even Second Avenue Deli.
Right.
And when I went to Montreal, I went to Schwartz's, which is the famous smoked meat, Jewish smoked meat plate, which is basically pastrami, same thing.
Right.
And when I ate theirs, I was like, oh my God, this reminds me of Galitz. And so I started asking, like, what's the difference between Montreal smoked meat and New York pastrami? Mm. And really it came down to that the way that you treat the brisket. Like, they used both the point and the flat. So mm-hmm. a brisket is two muscles. Mm-hmm. There's like a fattier muscle sitting on top of a lean muscle. It's very annoying. to deal with. So a lot of places in New York would trim that fat, you know, they would just keep the point and or just keep the flat and use that. And so we use both. And I think really, you know, like when we first did it and had it out and cut it, I ate it. And again, I was like, oh my God.
Yeah.
This is Galitz. Like, some things need to be changed and perfected.
Okay. Yeah.
But this is exactly what I was looking for.
Nice.
And,
okay.
And I was super, super happy. And I got a lot of like helpful things from like some old ass Jewish recipes. And that was super helpful.
Did that, I mean, was your family very into like family meals, like cooking like that?
I mean, my family is 100% food obsessed. As my sister always said, like, my father's love like is expressed directly through his stomach. Like, if my sister cooks something and I cook something, like, whoever did a better job, he loves more.
Right.
Without a doubt. There's,
I mean, it's connected with a lot of Asian cultures. Yeah. Like, you know, like, we don't really say I love you to each other.
Yeah.
It comes down to the food, to the dinner table.
Absolutely. I mean, my family is definitely, they're very verbal and physical. So they say I love you a lot and touch you a lot. There's a lot of fucking get away from me. But it's also food-wise. Like, you know, I have two sisters. One is my half-sister, my eldest half-sister, mm-hmm. and she owns five restaurants in New York.
Wow, okay.
And my other sister is like a great, great home chef. Wow. And my mother is a great cook and taught me basically everything that I know about cooking came from her. Just, she taught me all like basic things that have always helped, like how to make a soup. You know, she taught me when I was like 9 years old, like, this is how you do it.
Yeah.
And just like making, you know, like whipped cream or vinaigrette or things. And she's just a great teacher. She taught me how to drive. You know, she, and my father, Zobson, is absolutely terrible teacher. The worst teacher, great eater.
Okay, there you go.
Knows what he likes.
So when did that passion for barbecue started?
Well, it's funny because the first time I had barbecue, because New York didn't have any barbecue.
Yeah.
I had gone to Memphis with my father. He went on some business trip, and I think he just got lonely, and he took me. And so he and I went to Memphis, and he took me to some Memphis barbecue joint, and I loved it. I was like, this is incredible. And it just, and also I was interested. The process seemed interesting to me. I liked how like everything looked and smelled. And later on, I went to college in Chicago, and there were some really good barbecue places in Chicago.
I've heard, yep.
And I just was like, this is a food I really I really enjoy. And when we moved to Brooklyn, because I grew up in Manhattan, and my wife and I had lived all throughout Manhattan.
Right.
When I moved to Brooklyn, it was the first time I had a backyard. And okay. I was like, oh, man, a backyard. This is cool.
Yeah.
And so I started, had a barbecue and started figuring out how to smoke meat and stuff like that. And it was with these really cheap, shitty grills. Because
where did you get these grills?
Just at like Home Depot. Okay. You know, like the cheapest thing they had because I didn't have any money, really.
Yeah, sure.
And I had a friend who had a little bit more money. And after like a year of doing this, she was like, you're really good at smoking meat. Like your ribs are crazy delicious. She was like, I'm going to buy you like a real, like it was like a Rocky Mountain smoker thing. And she bought it from me as a gift.
What
and
an amazing friend.
A great friend. Still is a great friend.
Yeah.
But it was cool because learning how to do it on something really shitty and then elevating it up to something else, you're like, oh, this is like way easier.
Yep.
And you're getting the results. But the kind of thought process of using something cheap, it makes your skills better because you're having to improvise with that. And eventually when we came here, getting like a bigger smoker, it was like, oh, this is even better than this. Like, and still sometimes I kind of miss the improvisational nature of trying to figure out something with a really cheap just barbecue, and which is good. But in Brooklyn, I owned a record store, and I had Saturdays off because I needed, basically I worked all week, and so it was like one day with my kids that I could do something. So we started just having parties and a barbecue and play records, and people would come over. And at some point we started noticing that there was like strangers like coming around, and
what's going
so on? We started charging a little bit, and it just became sort of like once a month party thing that would always happen. And
where in Brooklyn was this?
In Carroll Gardens.
Carroll Gardens, okay.
So it's Carroll Gardens is South Brooklyn,
right.
So right by Red Hook, like
okay, if you think of Red Hook area,
where the BQE is.
Yep.
We are right on the BQE.
Wow. So. Okay, that sounds really cool.
Yeah, it was fun. it was definitely fun. And my wife is trained chef, Japanese chef, and she had a stand at Smorgasburg, which is like. And selling like kind of Japanese home cooking, like soul food stuff, and karage and curry and everything like that. And when we decided to move here, and we knew that we wanted to open a restaurant when we were in New York, but it was so crazy expensive. And when we moved here, she kind of looked at me and was like, you know what there's a lot of in Japan? Japanese restaurants. Let's focus on what you do. And to her absolute 100% credit, like the fact that she had faith in me to do it and was like, I trust your food completely. It's like, I'm super grateful to her for that.
So I did some research on you, I read the article, a really good article from Subcuda online.
Okay. Yeah.
And I love that story, but can you explain more like that... when you came to Japan, that major decision, like, I thought that was a really beautiful way to think about, okay, I gotta go to Japan now.
Well, I mean, coming here to Japan, it was just, you know, honestly, I woke up one day in New York, and I was like, New York is not the place I grew up in. Like, and it just, the entire place had absolutely... It just transforms, like any city. It's going to change. Yeah. But after 50 years living in one place, I felt just enough of it and enough of America. And I was like, Trump was just elected.
I got it.
I was just like, you know, this is a ridiculous country.
So like 2016, 20?
Yeah.
Okay, because I went to visit with my wife. We went to visit my family back home in New York, and we met up with some friends. And just you can just feel the sadness of the city after got elected. And we had dinner with a couple of friends in Manhattan, and just like they're just like just utterly depressed.
Absolutely. Like, wait. Oh. I think that.
Oh, it's okay. You okay? Oh, it's okay.
There, I got it.
But anyways, they're just, you can feel the city just sullen, just really down and out at that time.
It just, it's a really, like, stupid story, but it just highlighted my thinking. Like, there's a park that was by my kid's school, and the park was, it's like a public playground where all kids, and in Kyle Gardens, there's like a lot of wealthy people had moved in. It was an old Puerto Rican Italian neighborhood, mm-hmm. and a lot of wealthy people had moved in, and there's like public housing all around there as well. Mm-hmm. And the park, like young kids came from the projects, came to play basketball. It's just like a normal
park
thing because it's a fucking park, and they're part of the neighborhood as well. You might not want them to be part of the neighborhood, but they're the part of the neighborhood, for me growing up in New York, there's certain things that you just were like second nature. Like, mm-hmm. remember going with my kid to the park, and the kids are playing basketball, like older, like 13, 14 year old kids. And they're like rough, like running around, and I see other parents getting like distraught, because their kids, my son was probably 7 years old. So I like went across the street and got like two pizzas, mm-hmm. and brought them to these guys. And I was like, yo, here's some pizza. I was like, that's my son Haru. Just like, watch out for him. Mm-hmm. And they're like, oh man, thanks. And then for the rest of his time in Brooklyn, all those kids were always like, yo, what's up, Haru? Like giving them pounds and shit like that. And it was the easiest thing to do. And at some point I woke up and went to the park, and there is these posters put up from parents demanding a police presence in the park because I found out one of their kids at 8 years old or something had their like iPhone 12 or whatever stolen in the park. And in my mind, like, motherfucker, don't buy your stupid ass Nebraska coming family an iPhone 10 standing there,
Brooklyn.
like I would rob you.
Yes.
And just the idea that they would rather than talk to these kids have armed police walking around, that they would want their children exposed to police rather than what is effectively the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I can't do this anymore. That's it. I'm done. We're going. We're taking off. And and Japan. I always weirdly felt at home here. Like, even though my language ability sucks, all this stuff. Like. Yeah. It just, whenever I came to visit, I always felt weirdly, like, comfortable here. Okay. And I thought, okay, I can definitely do this.
Did your wife, Michael, did she have any, talk to you about like, well, why don't we just go back to Japan?
No, it's totally my decision.
It's your decision, okay.
100%.
Usually, it's most often, like, the Japanese partner would be...
No, I think she was actually much more resistant.
Oh, she's like, no, I'm going to stay.
No, she wasn't going to stay, but I mean, to be fair, there's reasons why she moved to New York to get away from Japan. I think that, growing up here, there's, I think, especially being a woman, there's a lot of pressures and things. And I think, there's reasons why she wanted to not live in Japan.
I totally understand. I mean, that's another different topic altogether.
Yeah.
like Japanese women, even the modern day women in Tokyo, they have it hard.
They have it hard. And I mean, it was funny because there was definitely a transitional period when we moved here that was way harder for her than it was for me. Mm-hmm. Just kind of for her getting back into the sort of Japanese lifestyle and things that she was expected to do. Mm-hmm. It was definitely Like, I could just be ignorant of everything, be like, that crazy foreigner, he's just, you know, where no one expects anything from me. They expected right. everything from her.
Right,
so
yeah.
I had to, you know, to be aware of that.
Right,
That while I was super happy with everything and that she might not be so thrilled.
Well, then, so you arrive here and you got this full-on motivation. I'm going to open a restaurant.
Absolutely.
And it's going to be barbecue.
Yeah. We had, when we got here, that was absolutely the plan. No, okay. And it kind of broke down in a very, like, she immediately went to work in kitchens yeah. around Tokyo, wanting yeah. to learn the restaurant business. And I stayed at home, basically taking care of the kids, because yeah. She was working from, like, 7 in the morning till midnight yeah, every day. Tough, yeah. Pretty brutal hours.
Yep.
And then we started putting together, like, I bought another cheap barbecue thing and put it up on our roof. And this okay. is out in way western Tokyo. And
okay, okay.
So started seeing, like, how I could do it. The first day that I did it, it's like, fucking fire department comes, all this stuff. And I was just like, oh, man. And my wife's father, like, came running up from the roof. And he was like, well, he was just like, all the neighbors are complaining. Like, they're saying that their clothes that are drying smell.
Yep, yep.
And I had to, like, go around, you know, the neighbor was
going outside.
Like, go man, you know. And I just felt like such an idiot. And this is not good. But, you know, like, even sitting up there on the roof, like, I was like, this is, like, the food is definitely good. Mm. And so we did a couple pop-ups. I have a friend who owns a Mexican restaurant here called Quita de Chocoro. It's in Morishita.
Okay.
And he has one in, like, now he has, like, 6. He's
okay.
super.
Okay.
There's one in Nihonbashi and a bunch of different places. But I knew him from New York.
Yeah.
And he let us use his space to do, like, a pop-up there.
Nice.
So we did, like, a couple pop-ups, and people were really, like, supportive and really great. And, you know, we were actively looking for spaces. And when I had moved here, because I used to own this record store, we were at a friend's bar who has, like, it's like a record store bar thing. Mm-hmm. And he was like, oh, this guy who I know, he heard that you were moving to Tokyo, and he wants you to open up a record store on it. Like, he's kind of taking care of the Shoten guy, and he wants you to open up a record store there. And I was like, no way, no records.
Record store.
I'm totally done. And so when we started really looking for space, I remembered that, and I was like, oh, I want to take a look at, like, who this guy is. And it was probably a year later, and he found someone else to open a record store because during that time. And so I was walking around here, and I felt immediately home. I was like, man, this reminds me of like old Brooklyn, like not old Brooklyn, but Brooklyn 25 years ago, like, specifically our neighborhood. It was like, there's all these old people around, there's stores that you don't know what they are. What are they selling?
Exactly.
Like, and then there's, like, some new stuff happening, but the balance is really good between, like, old and fucked up and new and cool. And I loved it.
I really thought you struck jackpot, because the moment I know, before I even came here, I've often visited this area, Hatagaya, for work or just hanging out with friends, whatever.
Right.
But the moment I walked, when I was Google mapping your restaurant, and I walked through this little tiny Shoten guy, and I'm like, this guy knows what he's doing.
Yeah, it was just vibey immediately.
I'm like, you know, the vibes are going to be so good. Yeah.
And, you know, and to be honest, Daisuke, who owns Paddlers, he's the guy who, like, has been really working to kind of work with the Shoten guy, and he kind of convinced, you know, a lot of these old business owners to, like, lower their rents a little bit to attract more mom and pop stores.
Yes, yeah.
And I think his pitch to them was like, look just north around the station. Yep. Do you want like another kitchen origin down here? Or do you want to keep the spirit of this neighborhood alive?
Yeah.
And all the those landlords were like, we want to keep the vibe.
I love it.
And so when this space was offered, you know, like I just saw it and was like, this is exactly perfect. It was a liquor store.
Yep.
And I like that they're still right around the corner. They just moved to a smaller location, and we kept the Matsumoto Liquor sign up because I was like, we got to honor this. They've been here for like 60 years, not pulling the sign down. Like, that would be so shitty. Like, Freeman, no way.
Like, what?
Yeah.
Wait, so at that point, did you able to go and visit the other shops and like talk about?
Yeah, I talked to, I mean, I met Daisuke.
Okay,
and,
okay.
And, you know, and... I told him like what we wanted to do, and and he definitely helped find the space. But a lot of people were interested in this space, and but my wife met with the landlady, and she and my wife just vibed. So just I felt bad for everyone else that was looking to get this space. Forget it. Like, she definitely was like, "I want you." So
okay, that's awesome. And then the next part is the smoker, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I mean, the thing to me that's always interesting is just the way that I've realized that everything you do counts in one way or another. Mm-hmm. And like the smoker, just it like so many things seem to come together for me, because in New York, I own this record store and I DJed and did music stuff. And there was a guy named Johnny Sender who was kind of like downtown music legend.
Okay.
So he is a weird guy, but
hero of the scene.
Well, no, I would not say he was a hero of the scene. He was like he had been in like some kind of interesting like post-punk kind of bands, and and like on the liquid variety kind of like danceable, know. And he DJ'd and other stuff, and he and I were good friends, and we met DJing at this place called Den of Thieves, which was on it was on Delancey and like Rivington on the corner.
Okay.
And they had like an old Yuri mixer and these turntables that he had suspended on this web of rubber bands so they wouldn't feedback.
Okay, got it.
And we did like a hip-hop night there, just playing like weird B-sides and LP tracks, and we just always had a really great time with each other like whenever we DJ together, because he had like great encyclopedic knowledge of like hip hop stuff, and I knew all the breakbeats and reggae stuff, and it was just like we always vibed together. And he came to Japan to visit right when we first moved there, and he was asking me what I was thinking of doing, and I was like, oh, you know, I want to you know, do this barbecue restaurant. And he was like, oh, it's funny. I ate at this barbecue place the other day and it's really good. You should check it out. Mm-hmm. And a couple of days later, I got, I had my wife and her friends had asked me to do, like, they were going to a park and to barbecue, know, like one of these, like, in Saitama somewhere where you go and rent. Like,
rent.
So I, like, made all this prep, and they really wanted, like, American, you know, barbecue thing. And it was just fucking disaster. Like, every single aspect of what I did, I just was like, oh, my God. Like, I had wanted to make, like, a carne asada type of thing. And so I marinated this beef that I thought I knew what I was buying. And I got there, and it literally had, you know, turned into just gloop. Yeah. The meat just melted. I like put it on the grill, and it was horrifying. Like I did, and everything that I did, I couldn't get the charcoal lit. I was just like, it was a disaster. Everyone was hungry and mad at me at the end of the day, and I was like, oh fuck, man, I'm the worst. And
never come back to Saitama again.
I was so ashamed of myself, and at that time I had been writing this blog for myself that was kind of my way of describing moving.
Yeah.
So I didn't care if probably no one ever read it, but it was just for me to like get my thoughts down.
Okay.
And I wrote about this. I made a post called like "The Barbecue King is Deposed." And it's like, and so it's all about how I fucked up. And I got like a message back from this guy, and he was like, "Hey, my name is So. I'm friends with Johnny Sender. He told me to read your blog. It's super funny. Come by my restaurant, and I'll help you with how to deal with charcoal." Like, you're not going to have these problems anymore.
And this is the part of the story that connected with me, because I lived in Nakameguro for 10 years.
Oh, okay.
And Hatos, So's restaurant, is like legendary.
Oh, absolutely.
If you are a local, everyone knows Hatos.
Yeah, without a doubt.
Like, that is the barbecue spot.
Yeah.
So I was like, that's crazy, that connection with
you. Yeah. So, you know, basically, I went over there to Hatos and met So and ate his food. I was like, "Oh, it's super great!" This is delicious. And we became friends. And then when we opened this place, I started panicking about smoker. I was like, "Fuck! I gotta figure this out." And I was like looking, you know, online, like, "Can I get, you know, smoker shipped over from America?" My friend who owns a barbecue place in Seoul was like, "I have an old one, but the shipping is going to be crazy expensive. It's super heavy." And basically I was looking at schematic designs online and stuff like that. And the guy who did our construction here is the father of one of my son's friends.
Oh, okay.
So he was like, "Oh, my uncle has a metal shop. He could probably fabricate this." And then So is like, "Oh, I can design, I think knowing the space." And he designed the smoker for Hatos, their smoker. So he basically laid out the design for the smoker.
So badass.
And then we went to Saitama, and my friend's uncle kind of made modifications based on what he was thinking, and we made it. So I was like, all of this dates back to being interested in playing some weird LP main source, you know, album track with Johnny Sender, and kind of bugging out to music together has led to this next chapter of my life. Like, nothing was forgotten. Everything mattered in terms of progression.
It is amazing. It doesn't matter where you live, but I love the going through life and learning how personal relationships how relationships so much matter.
So much matters, and so much, you know, like love and information.
Yeah.
I always tell my son this, you know, I'm like everything you do has some sort of purpose, whether negative or positive, and don't limit yourself to you know, this narrow framework, have big references, because it all will play into to something.
Yep.
There'll be some kind of a tapestry that you'll need that information, or that will inform you about the next thing that you're interested in. And none of it's forgotten. It's all there, you know?
And in this country, and Japanese people, or just Japanese in general and society, they respect that. And
absolutely.
They cherish that, those relationships. Because once you go sour, your image, you're done. You're kind of done in Japan.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, I always found it interesting because, my wife, she has classifications of friends. She's like, "Oh, that's my, kindergarten friends that I went to kindergarten with. And those are my high school friends. Yeah. They're different set. Yeah. They never meet, you know?" And then there's my university friends. Yeah. And then there's these workplace friends.
Yeah.
And I think it's super cool, I mean, I was super, super lucky that I was raised with, in my building, with three families that we all knew each other.
Yeah.
So I knew these kids from the time I was born, and they remained my best friends throughout my whole life.
For sure.
And they're still, like, you know, my closest friends of all time. And, but, you know, like, my first grade, I mean, like, Nini Postelnik, I don't know, you know, what happened to her. And you know, and even, like, I get, you know, every once in a while, like, anyone, like, you get some weird message on Facebook, like, hey, do you remember me from seventh grade? And I'm like, yeah, I remember you. Don't want to talk to you. You know, like, didn't like you a lot then. Still don't like you now. Like,
although I haven't touched on Facebook in a while, but it kind of is kind of refreshing to go back to Facebook and be like, oh, look at all these strangers in my friends list.
Yeah. Glad I don't have to deal with them anymore. These people? Yeah. Jesus Christ.
But anyways, yeah.
Those sparks of nostalgia are great, but I think Japan does value those personal relationships. Yes, and also it's, you know, like, I think, you know, Japan is a lot, I don't know, I don't want to say it's a less cynical place than America in terms of, but it's a place that is more accepting of joy than America is. Mm. The things that give you joy and pleasure, you know, right. Like, I mean, I think in Japan you can get away with saying, like, I love drinking.
Yeah.
Like, that's the thing I love to do. Yeah. In America, you said that, you're like, oh, maybe you should go to AA. Yeah. Like, and so it's just whatever people's, you know, otaku pleasures are, things that they derive pleasure from, people are pretty, like, for the most part, supportive of that. Like, oh, he's really into the WWE.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's great.
And I think it's easy. Yeah. If you live here for a long time, you realize that you get that, I don't know, after living here for such a long time, you get that innate ability to sense if someone has some passion.
Oh, or, yeah, absolutely.
Or you're just a fake.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's probably, man, I don't know if it's my worst quality or, like, a good quality, but I can tell, like, like, we used to call them in New York, we called them herbs, like, herbs.
Yeah,
like,
I've heard
that guy's such a fucking herb. Yeah. You know, like,
it's an old term.
And my herb radar is really tight, where I just see someone, I'm like, yeah, like, you're just it's not quite a poser, it's just a herb.
There's something, I mean, and Japanese are very, very sensitive to that.
To absolutely. People.
Like, when they see, like, they look at you, your place, like, they're going to come here because they know, like, this guy loves barbecue.
Yeah.
And, like, why not? Let's go and support him.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, you had mentioned in questions about, like, community. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that, and not on a monetary side, like, you know, purely like personal side. When we moved in here, I've always been a community person. You know, like, you know, the block where my store was in New York, like, I kind of became, like, the block captain. You know, like, all the Chinese ladies would, like, bring their bills for me to translate. You know, like, oh, what is this? And I was like, okay. You know, like, kind of, not took care of people, but I wanted to know everyone on the block. I want to know what's going on. I'm a fucking busybody. Like, I'm nosy. I need to know what's happening. Yeah. And, you know, like, when we moved to Carroll Gardens, it's like, all, you know, there's a couple old guys that were, like, definitely the block captains. Yeah. You know, you wanted to sweep in front of your house because that guy will give you a side eye if you don't. And they kind of adopted me as, like, the next generation of block captain. They're like, okay, you know, and I could sit, you know, drinking with them, on the stoop and talking to them about, you know, crap. Yeah. And when I got to this neighborhood, I was like, yes, I feel so comfortable here. And it was so moving to me the way, like, because we opened during the pandemic. Mm-hmm. So it was crazy to open during the time. Probably, you know, like, anyone, and people did tell me, like, why don't you just wait until COVID's over? I was like, I can't, you know, like, what am I going to do? Sit at home or we'll figure it out. But the way that this neighborhood kind of coalesced around us when we opened up and just wanted to be supportive, like, and come out. I mean, they liked the food. They thought it was delicious. But also just to kind of like, they wanted us to succeed. There was no like haters. I mean, there were some old people who were mad, and you know, there was
my liquor shop.
Well, I think it was more like, oh, why is that weird, you know, foreign guy like making noise, and you know, which was fine. Like, but you know, like everyone from old ladies to like were so supportive of us, and you know, like if we had to close down and just do takeout, they were here. I don't even know if they wanted to eat it. They were happy we were here. Mm. And I really felt like this community has been, you know, not just embraced, you know, the restaurant, but, you know, we ended up moving across the street from here.
Nice.
So we live right across the street. My daughter goes to school around the corner. Mm-hmm. And she's like, she's the queen of the neighborhood. Like every single person knows her. There's no one she doesn't know. She's on fire. You know, she like absolutely just loves it, and I just feel so much a part of this neighborhood, and happy to like always give back to like, I love, you know, like when we're not open, like my daughter brings her friends back here to like do their homework, and to me it's like the sweetest thing. I'm just like,
it's so nice. Love it. I think with many of my guests in the past, this revolves around the future of Japan.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of, you know, everyone knows that it's an aging population, and it's vital for these communities like here in Nishihara or any parts of Tokyo. You see it more and more often. Like I'm in a very similar neighborhood with a very awesome like Shotengai area.
What neighborhood?
It's called Hatanodai. It's in Shinagawa-ku.
Okay.
It's next to, do you know Togoshi Ginza?
Yes.
It's like the longest Shoten.
Okay, yeah.
It's nearby. But this is a very local area.
Yeah.
And there are more and more foreigners moving in because they're sensing like those community vibes.
Yeah.
And I'm feeling it too. I'm feeling it's going to get better. But because it's necessary, because Japan's going to need us, like, helping each other out when we get old.
Yeah, it's going to need that. And also, like, one thing I wish Japan would be a little bit more, would realize a little bit more, is just that they've created something wonderful, and to be a little bit more trusting that foreign people can see that and respect that and understand that and learn how to behave within it, because Japan is going to need immigrants.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about it.
Yeah.
And I think when people get here, they're like, oh, this is, a society that works as opposed to like every other society.
True.
And, you know, like when I first moved here, I was like, God, I can't believe I have to like sit here at this stoplight and it's making me fucking crazy. Like there's no cars within a mile. And then, at this point, you know, I sit there and I'm like, because I'm an egoist and I think everything revolves around me, I think if I cross the street now, everyone's going to start doing it, and then Japan will fall apart. And it's going to be because I'm the ruination. So I'm going to be patient and sit here and just do this, and because I don't want to ruin, you know, I don't want to be the first, you know, block to fall in this. So but I think Japan will have to trust that this is a wonderful society, and that people, that foreigners can understand that and work within that framework.
I'm very positive about it. I think the younger, your children's generation, they're much more open to it.
Yeah.
Definitely much more open. Because the older people realize like they can't do anything about it. Like they just can't. Like,
and I think the older people also are like, I think it's not the old people that have the problems. I mean, obviously some of them do. Yeah. I think it's like the ones who are like in their 60s, like my age, mm-hmm. some of those people have problems with immigration.
Mm-hmm.
But the really old people, they're just like, we want anyone.
Anyone's fine.
Anyone's fine. Like those people are just like, oh, you know, like, I mean, I've been so many like old, you know, like, because we lived in Netamaku. That's where Maiko's family is from. So we were staying out there. And there, you know, there's like little yokucho kind of drinking spots. And I would be in there with like four 80-year-old guys who happily converse with me in Japanese, even though I don't understand, and not stop and be like, ah.
I don't know if you've ever been to a sento, a public bathhouse. Yeah. Like, it's like, hi, Toshi. Like, 80-year-old Toshi talking about baseball.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, so I think those guys just want someone to talk to. Yeah.
That's exactly what it is.
So they don't care if you're, you know, like red, purple, anything. No. Just talk to me. Except there's one old guy in the sento here who, like, every time he sees me and I'm naked, he's like, oh, Freeman-san. You are pastrami. Super delicious. And I always feel weird talking so to him about my pastrami, like, while I'm naked. I'm always like,
awkward.
Arigato gozaimasu. No, can you stop talking to me about my pastrami? Because the way you say it is just weird. Like,
but like, to me, those are the magical moments why life is great in Japan. You know,
it's definitely pretty funny.
Oh man, but like,
can I just have to throw one piece of wood.
Oh yeah, no problem. So, no problem.
Sorry, you were saying.
Yeah. Just wanted to cap it off. Like, what things that are would you like to see in the future for Freeman Shokudo?
I mean, it's funny because I was just talking to my wife about this. I love Freeman Shokudo as it is. I love that it's totally, like it's definitely a reflection of my wife and I. I think there's some people that come here for a barbecue that are totally put off by a lot of it. They're like, why is there reggae music playing? Why isn't there mac and cheese? Where's, like, why is there falafel on the menu? Like, and I'm not from the South.
Yeah.
And and that's totally not who I am. Like, I didn't study in Alabama doing barbecue. I'm from New York. That's specifically, like, my food flavors, my sense of vibe comes from that experience, and I like having this restaurant where it's barbecue, but like vegetarians like come to the restaurant like all the time. Why would you want to like? I love vegetables, and I like, you know, all of those things, and I like having idiosyncratic things on the menu, and I like having specials that there's people that come here like 3 times a month, like. It's exciting for them to, they want to try like whatever it's new.
Yeah.
And given all that, and how like not cost effective what we do is compared to the amount of seats and stuff like that, this place will never make real money. Like, I'm totally happy with it. And it's I've never made this much money in my life before, but then again, I've always involved myself in selling old reggae records, like and not things that you make a fortune at.
Sure.
And so I always want this place to be what it is, and it will always feel like home to me, and it will always be perfect. What I would like to do is I do want to have a next restaurant that's more focused on provisions and more of a straightforward like sandwich lunch counter. And I have more of an appetizing section, so it would be doing smoked fish, like sable and smoked salmon, and like we already do smoked saba, so the smoked saba, and selling pickles and barbecue sauce and all that kind of stuff, so that people can pick up stuff and take home, and like do that more as and have a bigger kitchen that works, so I could really like. I love fermentation shit.
Yeah,
and
sure.
We make great pickles. Like, and if we had the space, we could make a lot more.
Yeah,
like, you know. And so I would like to have that, and we're actively working on expanding for that. And that really is the most difficult thing with that is again neighborhood.
Yeah,
because while Nishihara is great neighborhood for here, for if you're doing those type of like provisions and stuff like that, mm-hmm. you need people who are going home, you know, people that are already home. Right. So, so, you know, that has to be thought about a little bit more as to how to work that. But we want to do that. And I also, there's a restaurant in Connecticut that I think it was called... Fuck, man, was it called The Place? It was near the coast, and it was kind of like a half mile from the beach. And I just remember being taken there once, and it was just...
Was it near New Haven?
No.
Okay.
Like, obviously, okay. I was going on I-95.
Yeah,
like, you get off somewhere. Yeah. And but it was just like what I remember, and I only went there once, but it fucking really stuck with me. Mm-hmm. And it was basically like if you're driving to the beach, like maybe 10 minutes away, and it was kind of like outside, and they just had like a big like group of fires going, and they had like everything was outside, just picnic tables. And I just remember they were like, what do you want? And I was like, oh, those clams look good. And it was like just clams with like butter and fresh corn on the cob. And they had some spices and stuff like that.
Okay.
And cold beer.
Yeah.
And you just like sat at the picnic table. Yeah. And it was just really, really, really fresh. Everything and simple and just super great vibes. And I always go to Kamakura on Tuesdays and Thursday mornings for the farmers market.
Yep.
And I was like, man, if we could find a place like this just for the summer that we just, you know, like set up a just like fire pit and tables and and kegs on ice and just had like a table full of sauces and just fresh vegetables, meat station, seafood station, and just you'd just be like, "Ooh, I want some clams. I want this," and just like grill a bunch of like chimichurri sauce, put it on, drink some beer, have a little sound system going.
Yeah,
like, I was like, "Oh, that would be such a pleasure."
That's something
that's fantasy.
Yeah, I mean, I'm thinking about it right now. I mean, there are places around Kamakura where you know they have those beach houses.
Yeah,
if you can like connect with one of those people owners.
Yeah.
And you can do something like that.
Yeah, but it's... I have thought about this. And I was talking to someone who is basically taking over one of those things.
Yeah.
And they were like it's quite pricey.
I think
like,
it is, yeah.
And I think that for... Like, I think it's, like, not... affordable for us, but like I did go to like some hippie place that's kind of like near Zushi that was like a little bit in the hills
mountain
and it was like Hayama, something like that, but it was like it just seemed like kind of hippie place, and they had like a farm and some hippies doing stuff, and I was like, all right, if we could get rid of the hippies, this might...
just put reggae music.
Yeah, you know, it's always been my, you know, like, one of my great ironies in life is that I never liked hippies, and I only liked reggae music.
We all, you know, to each other's own. Yeah. I mean, but, like, I've always thought, to cap it off as well, I've always been a strong believer, as a musician, a music lover, I've always felt music and food is just like goes hand in hand. It has to. So like, you know, coming in, I remember coming in like just good reggae was playing when I came in, and I'm like, I got your ate your sandwich. Just, you know, in conclusion, I'm just like, boom, teleported back to New York. Like, this is a spot. This is the vibe. And I'm going to guarantee like this is going to blow up. I really believe your place is going to blow up for the younger people coming in too as well.
Oh yeah. I mean, this restaurant has gone so much better than we ever expected it to go. And, you know, like, and I'm much more of an anxious person than my wife is.
Yeah.
And, you know, things will be like super packed for, you know, 3 weeks in a row. And then we'll have one day where it's slow. And I'm like, okay, that's it. Everyone hates us. You know, we're done. They found me out that I'm a fraud. I don't know what I'm doing. And my wife's like, Jesus fucking Christ. Like, can you just relax? okay.
Like, it sounds so, like both of you are like the perfect yin and yang.
Oh yes, no, it she's much more level than I am. But it was funny because when we're first opening, I was like, you know, I basically told her, because she just said, you design everything, like just figure out how you want it set up and everything, and I trust you. And I was like, okay. And she was great with everything. She was like, oh, okay, these colors kind of weird, but all right. And then I was like, and the sound system. Yeah. And she was like, what? And I was like, yeah, you know, it's like going to be here and this. She was like, but there could be a table there. And I was like, no, it has to be like a big sound system. And she totally was like, she's like, I'm going to trust you on this. Okay. But she thought it was completely insane. And then once we opened, you know, like, I really worried about, like, the sound. And so, like, we had the amps made specifically for the restaurant.
Okay.
Because I was like, I want a sound that's, like, present. Mm. You really feel it, but volume doesn't have to be high. Yeah, like, yeah. And that every space in here, like, the music is, like, part of the atmosphere. That it's not some tinny, crappy speaker. It's, like, has body, it has volume.
Yeah, it looks and, pretty badass to me. Badass. I love looking at it.
And when we opened, she was like, you were right. Like, the music, definitely, it's part of what makes it. And she, I was like, you know, I'm not, you know, I'm not crazy in terms of, like, my devotion to analog music is based on, like, a reality that I think that that it's human. And I think that people feel that. There's something in the warmth of analog sound, and something that, you know, like, that has the oil from your fingers gets on it and changes the way it sounds, you know, after 20 years. And, you know, it becomes part of you. And I think that the way the frequencies are, it's so open-ended. Mm-hmm. And it was funny because, like, I'm not like a audio nerd
in any
way. Like, I don't sit there and be like, this sound is the rug.
There
was a record I bought normally, and I was listening to it. I was like, this record sounds fucked up. Like, something sounds weird. And then I looked at who mastered it, and I was like, oh, I knew it. And it was like this guy in New York who, like, he changed his whole mastering studio from analog
to digital,
and he, like, this is when you actually make the lacquer. Yep. So it's great when he mastered stuff for CD, but when he mastered stuff for vinyl, he was mixing through this thing, and it just sounded like super thin. So I showed my wife. I was like, all right, listen to this record, and then listen to this record. And she was like, holy shit. She was like, it's totally different. Yeah. I was like,
yeah. I totally agree with you with analog. I think about it with recording in the you know, when you have your band and you're in the studio, it's so much different recording live.
Absolutely.
Than because when I'm feeding off with my band members or something or my friends, then I have to do recording everybody separately. Something that's just not right.
No, there's something in the air. That's
like, especially if you're not, you have to be fucking really good.
Yeah.
To do it, like, if everyone's really really good, you can do it separately, but like, I really enjoyed the live record aspect of it. Just like looking at each other and be like,
yeah,
this is the one. This is the track.
It's also like, you know, like my friend who I mentioned, who we all grew up together, he died, unfortunately, during COVID.
Okay.
But he had a studio in, he was in this band Fountains of Wayne.
Of course.
And so he had the studio that was basically his way of, like, like, when he got into advanced, he was just like, I'll just buy a studio and we'll put it into that. But he had this Neve board in there, and it was so beautiful sounding. Oh. So I used to, like, go in there and just, like, mixes that we did, I would just mix it down on his knee just to like boost the sound. It was so beautiful.
And those are rare too these days.
It was super rare. It was always fucking getting broken though. So it's like, it was always a big pain in the ass. But that Neve board was a beautiful, beautiful board.
Nice. Well, Jeremy, thank you so much for
everything. Thank you.
Yeah, let's...
I would offer you pastrami.
No, no worries.
We totally sold out.
No, I didn't come here to expect.
No. It would be on Sunday. I like the last person in here got the last sandwich, and that's why today I have to smoke pastrami because I thought I'd have enough left over for Tuesday, but I was like, oh man, I gotta do this again because everyone ate all pastrami.
Most definitely, I'm coming back and I'm bringing more people.
So. Sounds lovely.
So, but yeah, thank you.
Absolutely. Thanks so much.
Yep.
I'd like to thank Jeremy and Maiko for having me over at their restaurant. You can find Freeman Shokudo on socials, Instagram, Facebook, at Freeman Shokudo. That's all one word. FreemanShokudo. And I'm going to go back there many times. And Jeremy claims that he makes the best falafel, so I gotta take up on that offer. So yeah, I'll be back there. That's such a good tasty food there. But you're listening to Made in Japan, Conversations with Meljo Catalan. For questions, comments, and concerns, you can email me at japanmademepodcast@gmail.com, as well as my Instagram and Facebook at Made in Japan Podcast. That's all one word. And yeah, thank you for listening. And I hope you guys are well for the new year. Staying strong, keeping it tight, keeping it right. And I'll see you in the next episode. Till then, peace out.